Among my people, this is as binding as having the same blood in your veins.
But that doesn't...
We must leave now, if we are to arrive in time, mistress.
Misha nodded, and they gathered the rest of her delegation from the Hollow, including Amanva and Sikva, who attended closely to Roger. They were escorted to the town circle of Fort Risen, a huge cobbled ring at the center of the city, eyed with a great well and surrounded by bustling shops. Leisha saw Razonian women shopping as well as Krasians, but though they still wore their northern dresses, the women's faces were wrapped in cloth that draped over their necklines as they went about in public. Many of them stared wide-eyed at Leisha and her mother, walking about uncovered, as if expecting their Dalsharim escorts to turn on them at any moment. Many of the Krasians had already gathered, including the Damaji in their canopied palanquins, and many Sharim and Dama. Three wooden posts had been erected in the circle, but there were no shackles or ropes to be seen. The crowd turned to see Jardir enter the circle, followed by Enevera on her palanquin and his other wives in tow. Leisha counted 14 of them, but had no idea if that was all. They came and stood next to Leisha and the Hollowers, close enough for Leisha to smell the Damaja's perfume. Jardir walked to the posts, waving his hand at the spears of the deliverer. The three Dalsharim needed no urging and no escort, walking out into the square and stripping to the waist. They knelt and touched their foreheads to the cobbles before Jardir, then stood and wrapped their arms around the poles with nothing to hold them in place. The one whose arm Wanda had broken had the limb in a white cast. Jardir reached into his robe, pulling free a three-tailed whip of braided leather with sharp pieces of metal woven into the last few inches of each tail.
What is that?
It is called the Alagai tail, Adama's whip. They say being struck by it is like the lash of a sand demon's tail.
How many strokes will they each get?
As many as they can stand for. Sharum are whipped until they lose their grip on the pole and fall.
But that could kill them.
Sharum are great warriors, but not known for their intelligence or instinct for self-preservation. They think it is a test of manhood to endure as many strokes as possible. Their brethren will be betting to see who endures longest.
I will never understand men.
Nor I.
It was brutal to watch. Each strike of the Alagai tail leaving bright lines of blood on the backs of its victim. Jardir gave each man a stroke before returning to the first, but Leisha didn't know if it was a kindness or an attempt to keep them from growing numb to it. She flinched with every blow, feeling as if it were striking her, too. Tears streaked her face, and she wanted nothing more than to flee the awful scene as the backs of the men became huge open wounds that showed their ribs to the world. None of them even cried out or had the sense to fall. At one point, she looked away and saw Enevera watching the proceeding with utter calm. She saw Leisha looking her way and sneered at the tears on her face. Something broke in Leisha then, a flare of anger acting as a ward against the suffering of the men. She straightened her back, dried her eyes, and watched the rest of the whipping with the same cool detachment the Damaja showed. It seemed to go on forever, but at last one of the warriors fell, and then another. When the last man fell, Jardir nodded to her, and Leisha rushed out to the men, pulling out the thread, salves, and bandages she had prepared.
Spread the word to all who would see paradise at the end of the lonely path. Any woman who takes a demon in Alagai Sharak shall be Sharam Ting, and of all the rites of Sharam accorded her.
Leisha saw horrified faces on Dama and Sharam alike.
If any oppose this decree tonight, let them step forward. I promise a quick death with honor. To any who oppose my word tomorrow, I will not be so lenient.
There were many scowling faces in the crowd, but none foolish enough to step forward. The next day, Aben arrived in the courtyard of the Palace of Mirrors with a Dalsharim at his side. The warrior's red night veil was around his shoulders, and his black beard was shot through with gray. There was nothing else remotely weak about the man, but Leisha was still surprised. Few of the Krasian warriors seemed to live long enough for their beards to be touched with gray at all. He walked proudly, but his hard face was pinched as if he was biting back a scowl.
May I present Gavram Asu Chenin Amkaval Amkaji, drillmaster of the Kaji Sharaj.
The warrior bowed at the introduction, and Leisha spread her skirts and dipped a curtsy in response. The warrior said something in Krasian too fast for Leisha to follow, but Aben was quick to interpret.
He says, I am here at the Deliverer's command to train your warriors for Alagai Sharak. Drillmaster Kaval was instructor to the Shah Damaka and myself when we were in Sharash. There is no one better.
Misha's eyes narrowed, and she looked at Aban, searching for the elusive truth in the practiced smoothness of his face. He was crippled in Sharaj, after all. Misha turned to Garrett and Wanda.
Do you wish to train?
Kaval and Aban had a short exchange, again speaking so fast that Misha, despite understanding many of the words, could still not follow. Aban seemed to argue a point, but Kaval balled a fist, and the Kafit bowed in submission.
The drill master asks that I tell your warriors their wishes are irrelevant. The Shah Damaka has given a command, and it will be followed.
It's all right, Leash. I want to learn.
Me too.
Misha nodded and stepped aside as Kaval beckoned the two forward for examination. He obviously approved of the giant Garrod, but seemed less impressed with Wanda, though she was as big and strong as most Dalsharim. He then came back to Misha. He again spoke in Krasian.
I can make a great warrior of the giant if he is disciplined. The woman we shall see.
The drillmaster stepped back into the courtyard, his movements quick and graceful. He looked at Garrod and thumped his chest.
Seal it!
The drillmaster would like you to attack him.
I didn't need you to translate that.
Garrod stepped forward, towering over the drillmaster, but Kaval seemed unimpressed. Garrod attacked, but his punches, careful though they were, met only air. He lunged to grapple and found himself on his back a moment later. Kaval twisted his arm and then released him.
He will be even harder on you. Steel yourself.
I ain't afraid.
Wanda lasted longer than Garrod, her moves smoother and quicker, but the outcome was never in doubt. Wanda's face grew pale and she gritted her teeth, but she refused to cry out.
The drillmaster will break her arm if she does not submit.
Wanda!
Kaval released her.
Belki bin Bersis, or Anlam Verbilium.
Perhaps I can make something of her after all. Please leave us so we may train without distraction.
Misha looked at Garrod and Wanda and nodded.
Why don't you join Roger and I for tea, Aban?
I would be honored.
But first, make it clear to Master Kaval that there will be the core to pay if I come back to find warriors too injured to fight tonight.
Aban's wives tried to serve them, but at Amanva's command, they backed off.
Sekhmet vas bizimet.
She clapped her hands, and Sikva scurried to prepare the tea. Misha wrinkled her nose. The girl might be Jardir's niece, but even she was little more than a slave.
They've been doing this since yesterday.
Aban nodded to Amanva.
Obizim Roger iti yaklarma. Hizmet etmek ishin yirimiz.
It is our place to serve Roger's needs. We will suffer it from no other.
I could get used to this.
Just don't get too used to it. It isn't gonna last.
Sikva returned soon after with the tea. She served silently, eyes down, and then retreated to where Amanva stood by the wall. Misha took a sip of her tea, swirled it around her mouth for a moment, and then spit it back into the cup.
You added a pinch of black leaf powder to the mix. Clever. Most people wouldn't have tasted it, and at that dosage, it would take weeks to kill me.
Roger spit his tea all over himself. Misha caught his cup as it fell and ran a finger along the porcelain rim, tasting the residue.
Nothing for you to worry over, Roger. Seems they're not quite so eager to be rid of you.
Aban carefully put his cup back on the table. Amanva looked at him.
Ah? You make a serious accusation. Do you wish me to translate?
By all means. Though I've no doubt she understood every word.
Lisha sin urustomos ununun kayen durusun sin uzerulum ikintrien.
Bir yalansive bir attal.
The Damating calls you a liar and a fool.
Tell her to drink it, then.
Amanva's eyes blazed as she snatched the cup from her without waiting for translation. The liquid was still hot, but she lifted her veil and quaffed it in one gulp. She glared at Misha with a look of smug triumph, but Misha only smiled.
Tell her I know she can just take the antidote tonight, but if it's the same one we use in the north, it'll give her bloody shits for a week.
The color drained from the tiny patch of skin visible around Amanva's eyes.
The next time you try something like this, I'll tell your father. And if I know him at all, your shared blood won't keep him from stripping that pretty white robe off your back and tanning your hide if he doesn't kill you outright.
Amanva glared at her, but Misha simply waved a dismissal.
Leave us.
Obizikov magisin senin yerin dijil.
It is not your place to dismiss us.
Leisha turned to Roger, who looked like he was going to be sick.
Ugh, send your brides to their chambers, Roger.
Go!
He didn't even make eye contact. Amanva's brows met in a harsh V.
Ben senin, gormaya sejim kuze dizi kopek.
Amanva stormed off with Sikva on her heels. Leisha memorized the words, filing the curse for future reference.
It's no wonder the Damaja fears you.
She doesn't seem afraid now. Bold as brass trying to kill me in broad day.
After Aman's last decree, it is little surprise. But take heart. They do you great honor. In Krasia, if no one is trying to kill you, it is because you are not worth killing.
Aman sat and finished his tea, then left a short time later.
Maybe it's time to leave, if they'll even let us.
Aman would let us go, if I asked him to. But I'm not going anywhere.
Leisha, they tried to kill you.
And never tried, and failed. Running off now would be just as good for her as if I died. I refuse to be driven off by that...
Witch?
Witch. She's got too much power over Aman as it is. I'm not giving up his ear without a fight.
Are you sure it's his ear you're after?
Leisha glared at him, but he met her gaze coolly.
I'm not blind, Leisha. I see how you look at him. Not like a Krasian wife, perhaps, but not like a friend, either.
How I feel about him is irrelevant. I have no intention of becoming part of his harem. Did you know Khaji had 1,000 wives?
Poor bastard. Reckon one is more than enough for most men to handle.
You'd do well to remember that yourself. Besides, Aban and Aman both know Arlen, and both claim to be his friend.
That's not what he told us. About Jardir, anyway.
I know. And I want to learn the truth.
What about Amanva and Sikva? Do we send them away?
So they can kill Sikva for lying about her virginity and failing to kill me? Not a chance. We took responsibility for her.
That was before she tried to kill you.
See the light, Roger. If I told Wanda to put an arrow in Enevra's eye, I have no doubt she would do it, but the crime would be mine. Better we have them here, where we can watch them, and perhaps learn something useful.
It was deep in the night, and Leisha slept restfully in her chambers.
Leisha! Leisha, wake up! Quickly!
Leisha lit a lamp, and she pulled down a robe of Krasian silk that Jardir had sent to her. She opened her door to see Roger standing there, looking haggard.
It's Amanva! I can hear her wailing in her chambers, but Sikva won't even open the doors!
I knew it! All right, let's go to see her.
They went down into Roger's wing, and Leisha pounded on the door to the chambers the two Krasian girls had claimed.
Oh, send her spuyer de gilsin.
Roger, run and fetch Garrod. If this door isn't open by the time you get back, have him break it down.
Roger nodded and ran off. As expected, the door cracked open a moment later, and a terrified Sikva peeked out.
Everything sunny.
Leisha shoved past her into the room, following Amanva's voice toward the privy chamber at the back of the room. Sikva tried to interpose herself, but again Leisha ignored her and tried the door. It was locked.
Where is the key?
Ben anatar in erai munkon no labilir. O labilidig in ibilimiorum.
Sikva ignored her, but Leisha had had enough.
Stop pretending you don't understand me. I'm not an idiot. You say one more word in Krasian, and the Damaja's anger will be the least of your worries.
Sikva did not reply, but the terrified look on her face made it clear she had understood.
Where is the key?
Sikva quickly reached into her robes, producing it. Leisha was through the door in an instant. The richly appointed privy stank of waste and vomit, only made worse by the jasmine burning in the incense brazier, a sickly combination that would have made most anyone heave. Leisha ignored the stench, going straight to Amanva lying on the floor next to the commode. Her hood and veils were cast aside, and her olive skin seemed almost white.
She's dehydrated. Bring a pitcher of cold water and set a kettle on the fire.
Sikva ran off, and Leisha continued to inspect the girl, as well as the contents of the commode. Finally, she sniffed at the cup on the vanity table, tasting the residue.
You brewed this poorly. You could have used a third as much flesh root and still safely counteracted the black leaf.
The young Damating said nothing, staring blankly, but Leisha knew she heard and understood every word. She took a mortar and pestle from her apron, hands darting from pocket to pocket without so much as a glance as she filled it with a proper mixture of herbs. Sikva brought the hot water, and Leisha brewed a second potion, bidding Sikva to hold her mistress up as she forced it down the girl's throat.
Open the windows to blow in some fresh air and bring pillows. She'll need to stay by the commode for the next few hours as we hydrate her.
Leisha and Sikva attended Amanva until her insides calmed and they could carry her to the bed.
Sleep's the best thing for you now. You'll wake in 12 hours, and then we'll try to get some rice and bread into you.
Why are you doing this? And my mother would not be so kind to one who tried to poison her.
Nor would mine. But we are not our mothers, Amanva.
When next I face her, I may wish the poison had killed me.
You're under my roof now. No one is going to try to do anything to you, including force you to marry Roger if you don't want to.
Oh, but we do, mistress. The handsome son of Jessam is touched by Everam. First and second wives to such a man. What more could any woman aspire to?
Leisha opened her mouth to reply, then promptly closed it again, knowing any answer she gave would fall upon uncomprehending ears. Alona was sitting in the hall when Leisha finally emerged from Amanva's chambers. Leisha wanted nothing more than to crawl into her bed herself, but Alona stood and moved to walk with her back to the stairs.
It true what Roger says? The girls tried to poison you?
Yes.
Means and Evra thinks you've got a good chance of stealing him from her.
I'm fine, if you care.
Course you are. You're my daughter, like it or not. Ain't no desert witch gonna stop you once you've got a shine for a man.
I don't want to steal another woman's husband, Mother.
Then why are you here?
To try and stop a war.
And if the cost of stopping a war is stealing the husband of a woman who tried to murder you, is that too high a price to pay? Oh, ain't stealing anyways. These women share husbands like hens share roosters.
Oh, to be so lucky as to be one of Amon's laying hens.
Better than the ones that goes to slaughter.
They reached Leisha's apartments, and Alona followed her in. Leisha fell onto a pillowed divan, putting her head in her hands.
I wish Bruno were here. She'd know what to do.
She'd marry Jardir and tame him. If she had your body and you, shoot, she'd have been both deliverers to her will by now and gotten her toes curled to sweeten the pot.
You can't know that, Mother.
I know better than you. I was apprenticed to that miserable old hag before you were ever born. And there were a scant few alive then old enough to remember Bruna in her prime. Whew, legs never closed, to hear them say it, till she married late in life. And she ran that town even more surely than she did in her dotage. More surely than you run it now, because she had power. Not just here.
Alona poked Leisha in the temple.
But here as well.
She stabbed a finger to point at her own crotch.
That is a woman's power, as much as gathering herbs. And only a fool chooses not to take advantage of it.
Take advantage how?
Jardir is obsessed with you. Any woman can read it on him at a glance. That is why Enevra fears you. And why you have opportunity to take this desert snake by the throat and turn it aside from your people.
My people? The Hollow?
Of course the Hollow. Rising sun has set and ain't nothing for it.
What of Angiers? Lacton? Every hamlet between here and there. I might be able to protect the Hollow, but what can I do for them?
From Jardir's bed? Is there a place in the world you could influence the war more? Slake a man's lust, and he will give you anything you ask. Surely that big brain of yours can think of a few simple requests to turn the worst of his tide. Or would you rather it be Inevra's voice that whispers advice in his ear as he drifts off to sleep each night?
It was a terrifying thought, and Leisha shook her head, but she still felt unsure.
The gates of heaven don't lie between your legs, Leisha. I know you wanted to wait for your wedding night, and truth be told, I wanted that for you too. But it didn't happen that way. And life goes on.
You see the world very clearly, Mother. I envy you sometimes.
You do?
Not often, mind.
Renna waited patiently as the rock demon materialized. She had chosen her perch carefully, high in the single tall tree atop a hill where a large facing of bedrock jutted from the ground like a broken bone sticking through flesh. The pattern of tracks in the soil told her the giant Corling, some dozen feet tall, materialized in this same spot almost every night. Over the past 6 weeks, Arlen had taught her many things, including the fact that rock demons were creatures of habit, and lesser demons would have learned to stay clear of any rising place claimed by a rock demon. As the foul gray mist seeped from the bedrock, slowly coalescing into demonic form, she closed her eyes as she embraced her fear and found her inner center. The world looked different as she opened her eyes and stood, bare feet gripping the tree limb in perfect balance. In her left hand, she gripped Harl's knife, running her thumb absently over the ward she had carved into the bone handle. In her right, she held a single chestnut. Her waist-length brown hair had gotten in her way and was now a short, spiky remnant with only a single braided tail to recall its former length. She had discarded her dress entirely, cutting her shift into two parts, a high vest laced tightly to hold her breasts in place, but open below to reveal her warded belly, and a skirt slit high on both sides to free her warded legs. Arlen still refused to ward her flesh for her, but she had ignored him, grinding her own black stems. The ink stained her skin a dark brown that lasted many days before fading. She looked down, seeing the demon solidify at last, and flicked the chestnut. Without waiting to see if it struck its mark, she stepped off the branch into thin air, dropping silently. The chestnut hit the demon's far shoulder as she fell, the heat ward she had painted onto its smooth surface blazing bright in the darkness as it sucked magic from the powerful coiling. The tough nut became superheated in an instant. The rock demon was unharmed, but the flash and noise turned its head the other way just as Rena landed on its broad, armored shoulder. She grabbed one of its horns with her free hand for balance and drove her knife into its throat. She snarled and drew her arm back for another strike, but the demon threw its head back, and it was all Rena could do to hold on to its horn and keep her perch. She swung wildly to avoid the talons as the demon clawed and punched at its own head in an effort to dislodge her, stabbing with a knife and kicking her warded feet at whatever targets came in range. Her blows distracted the demon, but they did little more. She could no longer access the more vulnerable eyes and throat. Sheathing her knife, Rena reached into her waistband, pulling free the long string of brookstones Kobe Fisher had given her in what seemed like another life. She whipped the necklace around the demon's throat, letting go its horn to catch the far end as it came around. She crossed her arms and dropped down into the groove between its armored shoulder blades, hanging from the ends of the leather cord just out of the enraged coiling's reach. She was slammed about but kept her grip, using her full weight to pull the warded beads tight around the demon's throat. Rena had painted the smooth stones with wards of forbidding, and they flared to repel, the magic crushing inward from all sides. The string grew warm as the magic built in intensity, brightening the night. The giant horned head fell free, and Rena kicked off, leaping out of the way. She looked at the black demon ichor on her hands and wound up her beads and ran off to continue the hunt. She had never felt so free. A flame demon came at her, a lone coiling hunting through the brush by the trees. Rena set her feet as it charged, waiting for the telltale inhalation. Rena crouched, face low to the ground, presenting a clear target as the demon pulled up short right in front of her. Rena dashed to the left in that instant, the bright blast of fire spit arcing through empty air. By the time the coiling opened its eyes and saw she was gone, Rena was behind it, grabbing its horns. She yanked its head back and gutted it like a hare caught in her father's field. In the scant moments the battle with the flame demon had taken, she had been surrounded. She turned to see a wood demon hunched before her, standing 6 feet to the shoulder, stooped. Farther back and waiting in the trees, her warded eyes caught its two fellows, their rough armor blending into the surrounding woods, but unable to mask their magic. When she engaged the first, the strongest, the others would come at her from the sides.
Is three more I can face?
She pushed the useless thought away. There was no outrunning demons, nowhere to hide once they spotted you. There was only kill or be killed.
Come on, then!
The warded man watched Rena from the trees on the far side of the road, shaking his head. It had taken him some time to track her down. He had gone to gather herbs and firewood and made her promise to wait at the keep until he returned so they could hunt together. This wasn't the first time Rena had gotten impatient or simply ignored his wishes and gone off on her own. Watching her slip around the flame demon's blind spot, laying it open from tooth to tail with her father's knife, he had to admit she was a fast learner. More than even Wanda of the Cutters, Rena Tanner had thrown herself into the art of demon hunting, body and soul, and her skill level, after just a few short weeks, was a testament to that. He wondered if he had done the right thing, teaching her to embrace her fears. Rena had taken it too far and quickly become reckless, as much a danger to herself as the demons. He understood what she was going through, more than she would ever know. The night was unforgiving, even to one who embraced its ways, as shown by the cops of wood demons he saw stalking Renna while her attention was focused on a flame demon. Likely, she would only see the one that came at her openly. The trunk and the branches would have her. The warded man knocked an arrow to his great bow, holding it at the ready. He would wait until she saw all three and knew doom was upon her before killing them. Perhaps then she would begin to take better care. Renna charged forward in a seemingly suicidal attack. The wood demon bared its rows of teeth and hooked claws, throwing out its chest to accept her initial strike. Renna pivoted, using her momentum to power a circle kick. The warded instep and shin exploded into the demon's chest. The other demons roared out of the trees and Renna charged at one, grabbing its wrist and setting her feet, twisting her hips to turn the force of the demon's attack against it. It was almost effortless, the way she made the heavy wood demon sail through the air into the third member of the copse. She ran into the press. One of the demons swiped at Renna from its prone position as she came within reach of its long, branch-like arms. She threw herself back, feeling the air whistle across her chest as its claws passed. She righted herself unharmed, but her momentum was lost, and all three wood demons had regained their feet to threaten her again. She reached into the pouch at her waist as they charged, hurling a handful of warded chestnuts their way. The two outermost corlings escaped unharmed, but the one in the center took the brunt of the salvo and its shoulder caught fire. In a moment, the whole creature was aflame. Seeing their fellow ablaze, the demons to either side backpedaled away from it, separating farther and giving Renna the opening she needed. She charged back in at one, stabbing up into the vulnerable gap between the third and fourth ribs on its right side. Her long knife pierced the corling's black heart. She pivoted and drove her knife in deeper, using it to lift the 200-pound demon clear over her head. She threw it into its blazing companion. Harl's knife, still deep in the demon, should have come free then, but the cross piece caught on its lower rib. The blade was torn from her grasp. Seeing her unarmed, the last demon charged her, tackling her into the scrub and dirt. Wards flared all over her body, but the demon, mad with rage and pain, bit and clawed wildly until its searching talons found purchase. She shoved hard against it and reversed the pin. She pumped her knees continually, hitting the demon's thighs to keep it from shifting its legs up to claw at her. She managed to free a hand, grabbing at her beads, and whipped them around the corling's corded neck. Renna rolled off the corpse, struggling to regain her feet before the other demons were upon her. She was covered in her own blood, though already she felt the flow decreasing as her stolen magic began to knit the wounds. Still, she felt in no state to keep fighting. She refused to give in, but when she raised her eyes, there was only Arlen there, glowing brightly with magic like one of the Creator's haloed seraphs. He was clad only in his loincloth, and he was beautiful, pale muscles rippling under the pulsing wards crawling across his skin. He wasn't tall like Harl or bulky like Kobe, but Arlen exuded a strength those other men lacked. She beamed at him, flush with pride in her victory. Three wood demons.
You all right?
I just need a moment to rest.
Sit down and breathe deeply. Let the magic heal you.
Renna did as she was told, feeling the deep cuts all over her body beginning to close. Soon, most would be nothing but thin scars, and even those would fade quickly. Arlen picked up the charred remains of one of her chestnuts.
Clever.
Thanks.
But clever wards or no, that was stupid of you, Ren. You could have set the forest on fire, not to mention the foolishness of taking on three wood demons at once.
Didn't ask him to stalk me.
But you did ignore me and go hunting a ripping rock demon by yourself. And you left your cloak back at the keep.
Cloak gets in the way when I hunt.
I don't care. Last demon nearly killed you, Ren. Your ground form against it was terrible. A niche rum could have broken that hold.
What's it matter? A one?
It matters because sooner or later you won't. Even a wood demon can get lucky and break a hold, Renna. Strong as you feel when the magic is jolting through you, you're not half as strong as they are. Forget that. Cease to respect them even for an instant and they'll have you. That means you take every advantage you can get, and being invisible to demons is a big one.
Why don't you use it?
Because I gave it to you.
Demon shit, you were hunting through your bags for it like you hadn't seen it in weeks. Bet you ain't never worn it, neither.
This ain't about me. I've been at this much longer than you, Ren. You're getting drunk on magic, and it ain't safe, I know.
If that ain't the night calling it black, you do it and you're fine.
Correspondent Renna, I ain't fine. Knight, I feel it changing me as we speak. The aggression, the disdain for dayfolk, it's the magic talking. Demon magic. Little makes you strong and too much makes you feral.
He held up his hand, covered in hundreds of tiny wards.
It ain't natural what I done. Made me crazy a good sight, and I don't reckon I'm even half sane now. I don't want to see it happen to you.
Renna took his face in her hands.
Thank you for caring.
He smiled and tried to look down, but she held his face and kept eye contact.
But you ain't my dad or my husband. And even if you were, my body's my own, and I'll do with it as I will. Ain't living my life how other people tell me no more. I'll follow my own path from now on.
You following your own path, or have you just latched onto mine?
Renna's eyes bulged, and every muscle in her body screamed at her to leap upon him, kicking and clawing and biting until he... She shook her head.
Leave me alone.
Come back with me to the keep.
Damn your ripping keep! Leave me alone, you son of the core!
All right.
Renna locked her jaw tight, refusing to cry as he walked away. She got to her feet, keeping her back straight despite the pain as she retrieved her knife from the charred remains of the demon. Despite the conflagration, the weapon was undamaged and still tingled with residual magic as she wiped it off and returned it to its sheath on her hip. She stood a long time after Arlen left, two sides warring within her. One wanted to scream and charge into the night, looking for demons to vent her rage upon. The other part wondered if Arlen was right, and threatened to drop her weeping to the ground at any moment. She closed her eyes, embracing both the pain and the rage, and stepping away from them. It was amazing how quickly she calmed. Arlen was simply being overprotective. After all she had done, he still didn't trust her. In a place beyond feeling, she set her feet and began the first shuriken, flowing from one move to the next, trying to force the forms into her muscles so deeply that they would come without her even thinking of them. As she did, she recalled every moment of the night's battles, searching for ways she could improve. He might be the almighty warded man to others, but Renna knew he was just Arlen Bales of Tippett's Brook, and she'd be corespond if there was anything he could do that she could not.
That went well.
The warded man didn't go far, sitting and putting his back to a tree, closing his eyes. His ears could hear the scraping of caterpillars on leaves. If Renna needed him, he would hear and come. He cursed the childhood naivete that kept him from seeing Harl for what he was. When Elaine had offered herself to his father, he had thought her wicked beyond words, but she was just doing what she needed to survive, as he himself had done out on the Crasian desert. And Renna, if he'd gone back with his father instead of running off when his mother died, she would have come back to the farm with them, safe from her father and spared a death sentence. Their own children would be promising age by now. But he had turned his back on Renna, another path to happiness abandoned, and her life had become a horror as a result. He was wrong to have brought her with him. Selfish. He was thinking only of himself to damn her to this life just to keep himself sane. Renna was choosing his path because she felt she had nothing left to lose. But it wasn't too late for her. She could never go back to the brook. But if he could get her to Deliverer's Hollow, she could see that there were still good folk in the world. Folk willing to fight without giving up the very things that made them human. But the Hollow, even if they took the straightest route possible, was still more than a week's travel from their keep. He needed to return Renna to civilization immediately, before her new wildness became the only thing she knew. Riverbridge was less than 2 days away. From there, they could go on to Cricket Run, Angiers, and Farmer's Stump before reaching the Hollow. Every chance that presented itself, he would force her to interact with people and remain alert through the sun instead of sleeping the mornings away and tracking demon patterns in the afternoon, as both of them had taken to doing. He hated the idea of spending so much time amid people himself, but there was nothing for it. Renna was more important. If people saw his wards and began to talk, so be it. Euchre had kept his word in letting refugees cross the dividing, but with all of Ryzen's harvest lost and summer solstice come and gone, it was hard times for all. River Bridge was swollen on both sides of the river by a growing tent city of refugees outside the walls of the town proper, poorly warded and rife with filth and poverty. Rennick crinkled her nose in disgust as they rode through, and he knew the scene was doing nothing to dissuade her rejection of civilization. The number of guards at the gate had increased as well, and they looked disparagingly at the warded man and Renna as they approached. It wasn't surprising. Covered head to toe, even in the hot sun, the warded man's appearance never failed to draw attention, and Renna, clad in scandalously revealing rags and covered in fading black-stem stains, did little to reassure them. But the warded man had yet to meet a guard in any city or town who didn't turn welcoming at the sight of a gold coin, and he had many in his saddlebags. Soon after, they were inside the walls, stabling their mounts outside a bustling inn. It was early evening, and the bridge folk were returning home from a day's toil.
Don't like it here. Half the folk are starving, and the other half look as if they expect us to rob them.
Ain't nothing for it. I need news, and that can't be had out in the wilds. Get used to towns for a while.
The taproom of the inn was crowded at this time of day, but much of the activity was centered at the bar, and the warded man spotted a small empty table in the back. He and Renna sat, and a barmaid came to them after a few moments. She was young and pretty, though her eyes had a sad, tired look to them. Her dress was clean for the most part, but it was worn, and he knew at once from the tone of her skin and the shape of her face that she was Rezonian, probably one of the first of the refugees lucky enough to find work. There was a raucous table of men seated next to them.
Hey, Millie, another round here!
He slapped the barmaid's rump. She jumped and closed her eyes before putting on a false smile and half-turning to the men.
Sure as day, boys.
Her smile vanished when she turned back to them.
What'll you have?
Two ales and dinner, and a room if there's one to spare.
There is, but with all the folk passing through town, price is dear.
The warded man nodded, laying a gold coin on the table. The maid's eyes bulged. She had probably never seen real gold in her life.
That should cover our meal and a night's drinking. You can keep the change. Now, who should I speak to about that room?
The girl snatched up the coin instantly before any of the surrounding patrons could see it.
Talk to Mitch. He owns the place.
She pointed to a large man with rolled sleeves and a white apron, sweating behind the bar as he tried to keep all the mugs being thrust at him full of ale. As he turned to look, the warded man saw her thrust the coin into the front of her dress.
Thank you.
Have your ales right away, Tander.
Stay here and keep to yourself while I get us a room. I won't be long.
Renna nodded, and he moved off. There was a tight press at the bar, men looking for a last few ales before retiring behind their wards for the night. He had to wait at the end for the innkeeper's attention, but when the man glanced his way, the warded man flashed another of his gold coins, and he came swiftly. Mitch had the look of a once burly man gone fat. Formidable enough to toss an unruly patron, perhaps, but success and middle age seemed to have sapped the strength of his youth.
A room.
The warded man handed him the coin. He pulled another from his purse and held it up.
And news of the South, if you have it. Been out Tibbetts Brook way.
Ain't nothing passing for news out there.
The warded man took a step back, and the innkeeper immediately backed away, glancing nervously at the coin, afraid it might disappear.
South's all anyone talks about these days, Tender. Ever since the desert rats stole the Hollow's herb gatherer as bride for their leader, the demon of the desert.
Ugh, Jardier.
Word is, he came there looking to kill the warded man. But the deliverer's up and disappeared.
Rage welled up in the warded man, burning like bile. If Jardier harmed Leisha in any way, if he so much as touched her, he would kill him and scatter his armies back to the desert.
Is you all right, Tender?
The warded man flicked him the mangled coin that had been in his clenched fist and turned away without waiting for a room key. He needed to get back to the Hollow with no delay.
Renna!
Renna sucked in her breath as they entered the tavern. She had never seen a place like this, where folk gathered in such a tight, uncomfortable press. The din was overwhelming, and the air was hot and stale, choked with pipe smoke and sweat. She felt her heart pounding, but when she glanced at Arlen, she saw he stood tall, his stride sure, and she remembered who he was, who they were. She straightened as well, meeting the eyes of those who stared with cool indifference. When the man at the table next to them slapped the barmaid's bottom, Renna felt a rage fly through her like nothing she had ever felt. Arlen pretended not to see, but she knew better. Like her, he was probably fighting the urge to break the man's arm. After Arlen left to speak with the innkeeper, the man turned his chair to face her.
Thought that Tander'd never leave.
He was a tall Milanese man, broad-shouldered, with a coarse yellow beard and long golden hair. His companions at the table all turned to look at Retta, pawing at her bare flesh with their eyes.
Tander?
Your chaperone in the robes. Figure a girl as pretty as you needs a holy man to escort her about, because no other man could keep his hands off.
The man reached under the table, his large hand wrapping around her bare thigh and squeezing.
I figure you're woman enough for all three of us. Bet you're already dripping for it.
His hand probed higher beneath her skirt. Retta had had enough. She reached down and gripped his thumb with her left hand while putting the knuckle of her right hard into the pressure point between his thumb and forefinger.
Ow!
The big man's grip weakened, and a Sharasak twist bent his wrist back and planted his hand firmly on the table, where her knife cut it off. Suddenly, blood began to spurt from the wound. His friends all leapt to their feet, knocking back their chairs. Retta was ready for them. She leapt onto the table, crouching with her feet set wide and her father's knife in a downward grip beneath her forearm, hidden from most onlookers, but ready to slash out at any who came near.
Retta!
Arlen grabbed her from behind. She kicked and twisted as he pulled her down from the table.
Hey, what's going on here?
Mitch shoved through the gathering crowd carrying a heavy cudgel.
No! The witch cut off my hand!
Lucky I didn't cut off more than that! You had no right to touch me there! I ain't promised to you!
The innkeeper whirled on her, but then caught sight of Arlen, and his eyes widened. Arlen's hood had fallen back as he struggled to hold her, revealing his warded flesh to all.
Warded man.
Time to go.
Retta kept pace with Arlen as he shoved past those who did not scurry out of his way. He tucked his hood back in place, but there was still a sizable crowd following them from the inn. Arlen quickened his pace, dragging her to the stables, where he flipped the hand another golden coin and headed for Twilight Dancer. Moments later, they burst from the stables and galloped from the town. The guards at the gate ran after them as the crowd from the inn came running up behind, but dusk was falling and no one dared follow them into the gloaming.
Correspondent Wren, you can't just go around cutting people's hands off.
They had stopped for the night in a clearing not far from town.
Deserved it. And no man gonna touch me there again, except I want him to.
Break his thumb next time. No one will look twice at you for that. After what you did, there'll be no going back to Riverbridge for some time.
Hated it there anyway.
She spread her arms as if to embrace the night.
This is where we belong.
Deliverer's Hollow's where I belong. And with what that innkeeper told me before you pulled your crazy stunt, ain't no time to waste getting there.
So let's go.
How can we? You just cut us off from the only ripping bridge in Thesa. Dividing's too deep to ford and too wide for Dancer to swim.
Sorry. Didn't know.
Done is done, Ren. We'll figure something out, but you're gonna need to cover up a bit in towns. Fighting to bear your wards to the night, but that much flesh will put ideas in the head of any man that's easy in the light.
Any head but yours, it seems.
All they see is bare legs and cleavage. I see the blood-drunk girl who thinks with her knife more than with her head.
Son of the corp!
She launched herself at him, knife leading. Arlen slid to the side effortlessly, grabbing her wrist and twisting the knife from her hand. He put his hand against her elbow and used her own force to throw her onto her back.
You're making my point for me. Stop it!
Ain't this what you wanted? Someone didn't slow you down? Someone who weren't afraid of the night?
She pulled at his grip, but his arms were iron. Their faces were mere inches apart.
Didn't want anything, Ren, except to get you out of a bad situation. Didn't mean to make you like me.
You didn't make me do anything except look hard at myself. Everything else I done because I wanted. You leave me tomorrow, I'll still paint my skin. I ain't going back to prison now I've had a taste of being free.
She felt his grip weaken and could have pulled her hands free if she'd wanted to. But there was something in Arlen's eyes, a flicker of understanding she hadn't seen before.
Thought of the night we played Kissy in the hayloft a lot when I was a girl. Meant that kiss as a promise, and I felt it on my lips years after, while I waited for you to come back. Always thought you would. Didn't kiss no other till Kobe Fisher. And by then, it was the only way not to be alone with Dad. Kobe was a good man, but I didn't really love him any more than he did me. Barely knew each other.
You barely knew me, too, when we were kids.
Didn't know what promising meant, either. Or that what Laney and Dad were doing was wrong.
didn't understand a lot of things I do now.
She felt tears welling in her eyes and had no choice but to let them fall.
Seeing what you are and how you live, ain't got any illusions. But I could still be a wife to you. Want to? You'll have me.
He kept looking at her wordlessly, but his eyes said more. He bent even closer. Their noses touched gently, and she felt a shiver go through her.
Sometimes I can still feel that kiss.
She closed her eyes and parted her lips. For a moment, she was certain he would kiss her, but then he let go her arms and rolled off. She opened her eyes in surprise to see him get to his feet and turn away.
Don't know as much as you think you do, Ren.
Creator, you're married already!
But Arlen looked back at her. This was not the polite barks he might give at a jest or a cruel sound meant to hurt, but a full laugh that shook his body so much he needed to put a hand on Twilight Dancer to steady himself. She felt her lungs ease as the sound denied her fear. Something in her gave way. It went on a good while, and the tension between them had vanished. Rena got to her feet and put a hand on Arlen's arm.
If there's something I don't know, then tell me.
Arlen looked at her and nodded. Again, he pulled from her grasp, walking a few feet away, his eyes on the ground.
Here.
He kicked the dirt.
There's a path through the core right here.
She came over, looking with her warded eyes. Indeed, the glowing mist eddying about their feet was flowing from the spot like smoke from a pipe.
I can feel it stretching all the way to the core. It's calling to me, Ren. Like my mam at supper time, it's calling me, and if I wanted to...
He began to fade away, as if he were a ghost or a Corland.
No!
Rena grabbed at him, but her hands passed right through.
You tell it to throw its call down the well!
Arlen solidified after a moment, though his eyes were still sad.
The wards ain't why I can't live a normal life, Ren. This is where drawing too much magic leads. I'm more demon now than man. An honest word, each dawn I wonder if today's the day the sun's gonna burn me away for good.
You ain't no demon. Demon wouldn't be worried about the Liverer's Hollow or Tibbetts Brook. Demon wouldn't care if some girl he knew got caught or put his life aside for months to try and help her.
Maybe. But only a demon had asked that girl to become one herself.
You didn't ask me nothing. I make my own choices now.
Then take time and make it with care. Because it ain't one you can take back.
Roger told everyone he practiced his fiddle by the great stairwell of the manse rather than in his own wing because that precise spot would let the sound echo throughout the building. It was true enough, but the real reason he had chosen the spot was that it afforded a perfect view of the door to Amanva and Sikva's chambers. For 3 days, he'd seen no sign of the girls. He didn't know why he cared. What had he been thinking, standing up for Sikva when he had the perfect excuse to refuse them both, or letting them stay after they had tried to kill Leisha? Was he actually considering becoming son-in-law to the demon of the desert? The thought of marriage had always terrified Roger. He had left Hamlet's half a dozen times in the last few years to avoid that noose. Yet he had leapt to Sikva's rescue without a thought, and even now the beautiful harmony of their voices resounded in his head. Roger ached to join that harmony, and when he thought of how their robes had fallen to the floor, it brought another kind of ache, one he hadn't felt for any other woman since he met Leisha. But Leisha didn't want him, and Eric had died drunk and friendless. Abin's women appeared now and again to bring food and remove commode pots, but the door to the girls' chambers never opened more than a crack, and always slammed shut before he could so much as peek inside. That night, at Alagai Sharak, Roger kept a nervous eye on Jardir. Kaval had Garrett and Wanda fighting with spear and shield alongside the other Dalsharim, and they acquitted themselves well. Garrett might be too clumsy for Sharasak, but in a shield press, there was no one stronger, no one who could reach his spear farther from the warded shield wall. But Roger felt his absence acutely as he, Leisha, and Jardir followed the press with several spears of the Deliverer, even though Roger kept them bathed in his music and the demons did not approach. Sooner or later, Jardir would ask Roger's intentions toward his daughter and niece, and if his answer was not satisfactory, violence and death might quickly occur. His. But thus far, Jardir only had eyes for Leisha, doting on her like a man truly in love. Of course, that made spending time around him no easier, especially when Roger caught Leisha returning the gazes. He wasn't a fool. He knew what that meant, even if she didn't. Roger was relieved when the sweep ended and they were dismissed into the city. He was thoroughly miserable, his fingers numb from playing and every muscle in his body aching. He was bathed in sweat and coated in a greasy layer of soot from burning demons. He stumbled to his bedchamber, thinking to fall into oblivion for a few hours, but the sweet-smelling Krasian oil lamps in his room were lit, which was odd, since it had still been light out when he left. A pitcher of cool water was on his nightstand, along with a loaf of bread that was still warm to the touch.
I have had Sikva prepare you a bath as well, intended.
Roger spun around, throwing knives coming into his hands, but it was only Amanva, with Sikva kneeling behind her beside a great steaming tub.
What are you doing in my room?
Amanva knelt smoothly, ritually, touching her forehead to the floor.
Forgive me, intended. I have been indisposed of late, and depended overmuch on Sikva and my recovery. My heart aches that we have not been able to attend you.
It's all right. I don't need anything.
Your pardon, intended. But you do need a bath. Tomorrow begins the waning, and you must be prepared.
The waning?
Dark moon, when Alagai Ka, the demon prince, is said to roam. A man must have bright waning days to hold him steady in darkest night.
That's beautiful. Someone should write a song about that.
Your pardon, intended. But there are many. Shall we sing one while we bathe you?
My master told me to beware things too good to be true.
I don't understand.
Perhaps I should bathe myself.
You have already seen us unclad, intended. Do you fear what we may see?
It's not that.
Do not trust us.
Is there a reason I should? You pretend to be innocent girls who don't speak a word of Thesen. Then you try to kill Leisha? And turn out to have understood every word we've said? How do I know there isn't a black leaf in that tub?
If that is your feeling, then kill us, intended.
What? I'm not killing anybody.
It is your right, and no more than we deserve for our betrayal. It is the same fate we will face if you refuse us.
They'll kill you? The Deliverer's own blood?
Either the Damaja will kill us for failing to poison Mistress Leisha, or the Shardama Ka will kill us for attempting it. If we are not safe in your chambers, we are not safe.
You are safe here, but that doesn't mean you need to bathe me.
My cousin and I never meant you dishonor, son of Jessam. If you do not want us as wives, we will go to our father and confess.
I don't know if I can accept that.
You need not accept anything this night, save a song of waning and a bath.
As one, the Krasian girls lowered their veils. They rose to their feet and came to him, gently guiding him to the tub and pulling at his clothes. Soon he was naked and sitting in the steaming water, feeling the delicious heat leech the pain from his muscles. Sikva shrugged and her black silk robes fell to the floor. Roger gaped as she turned to unfasten Amanva's robes as well. Sikva stepped into the tub in front of him. Amanva got in behind. Amanva began spilling bowlfuls of hot water over his head as Sikva took a brush and a cake of soap. She was firm and efficient, scrubbing the dirt and blood from him while massaging his sore muscles, but Roger barely noticed, eyes closed, drunk on their voices and the feeling of their skin until Sikva's hands dipped below the water.
Sikva is already known to man and trained at pillow dancing. Let her be our waning gift to you.
Roger didn't know exactly what pillow dancing meant, but he could well imagine. Sikva's lips met his, and she moved onto his lap. Leisha hadn't realized Roger's bedroom was directly beneath hers until she heard Sikva. At first, she thought the girl was in pain and sat up, ready to fetch her apron. But then she realized the nature of the sounds. She wasn't surprised, really. In some ways, it was more surprising it had taken so long. Siegfried's state, after Enevra had been so encouraging of a virginity test, had never set well with Leisha. It was too easy a play on Roger's chivalry, too convenient a way to tempt him into accepting them as brides. Roger was only a man, after all. She knew it was only half the story. Enevra had played her as well. In truth, though she did not approve of a man taking more than one wife, she thought Roger would have a good influence on the girls, and perhaps the responsibilities of a husband might help mature him as well, if this was what he wanted.
Even if it is, I don't have to listen to it.
Leisha gave up on her bed and walked down the hall, choosing one of the many empty bedrooms on her floor. She fell gratefully into the covers and expected to drift off immediately, but the sounds had affected her, bringing unbidden images to mind. Jardir, his shirt stripped off, his muscled skin alive with wards. She wondered if they would tingle to the touch as Arlen's had. When she finally drifted off, it was to thoughts of passion. In her dreams, she remembered the heat of the fireplace as she and Garrett had squirmed together on the floor of her parents' common room. Merrick's wolfish eyes, the ardent feeling of Arlen's kisses and embrace. But Garrett and Merrick had betrayed her, and Arlen had shunned her. The dream became a nightmare as flashes, more detailed than ever before, came back to her about that afternoon on the road when she was pinned by three men. She felt the way they had pulled her hair, relived what they had done atop her, things she had blocked from her mind, but knew were horrid truth. Through it all, she could see the sneer Enevra had given her at the whipping. She woke up with her heart pounding in her chest. Her hand shook for something to defend herself with, but of course, she was alone. When she reoriented herself, the fear fled, replaced by harsh anger.
They took something from me on that road, but I'll be corresponded if I let them take everything.
Leisha felt the paint and powder thick on her face as she tried on what felt like the 100th dress, all the while being careful of her pinned hair, lest it lose its shape. Jardir was coming to court. He had sent word that morning that he wished to visit in the afternoon to continue to read to her from the Evesia, as he had done on the road, but no one had any illusions regarding his intent. Aben's first wife, Shamava, brought dozens of dresses for her to try, Crasian silk smoother than a baby's skin, brightly colored and scandalously cut. She and Alona dressed Leisha like a doll, parading her before the mirrors lining the walls and arguing over which cuts were most flattering. Wanda looked on in amusement, probably feeling vindicated for the similar treatment she had suffered at the hands of Duchess Arane's seamstress.
Oh, this one's too much, even by my standard.
Too little, you mean?
The dress was practically transparent, like something Enevra would wear. She'd need one of Bruna's thick-knitted shawls to feel half-decent in it.
You don't want to give it all away. Let him work a bit to earn more than a peek.
Alona chose a more opaque dress, but the silk still clung to Leisha in a way that made her feel as if she were naked.
Nonsense! Mistress Leisha has a body to rival even the Damaja. Let Shardamaka see well what he cannot have until the contract is signed.
Enough!
Leisha pulled the dress Alona had chosen over her head and threw it to the floor. She took a cloth and began to wipe away the paints and powder Shamava had applied to her face while Alona looked over her shoulder.
Wanda, go and fetch my blue dress.
That plain old thing? Well, you look like...
Like myself. Not some painted Angerian whore.
Oh, at least leave your hair. I worked all morning on it. And it won't kill you to look nice.
Leisha turned, admiring the job her mother had done with her rich black hair, sending it in curling cascades down her back with a rebellious cut across her forehead. She smiled. Wanda returned with Leisha's blue dress, but Leisha looked at it.
On second thought, fetch my festival dress. No reason I can't look nice.
Leisha waited in her chambers for Jardir to arrive. She had sent the other women away. Their talk only made her nerves tighten further. But it was not Jardir waiting on the other side, only Aben, his eyes down as he held a tiny bottle and a tinier glass.
A gift for courage.
What is it?
Oh! Smells like something I brew to disinfect a wound.
No doubt it has been used for that purpose many times. It is called kuzi, a drink my people often use to calm their nerves. Even the Dal Sharam use it to give them heart when the sun sets.
They get drunk before going off to fight?
There is a clarity in the haze of Kuzi, mistress. One cup and you will be warmed and calm. Two and you will have a Sharum's courage. Three and you'll feel you can dance on the edge of Nir's abyss without falling in.
Perhaps one. I wouldn't mind a little warmth right now.
Every cup is easier than the last, mistress.
Leisha poured herself a second cup. Indeed, it went down more smoothly. The third tasted just like cinnamon. Aben was right about the Kuzi. Leisha could feel it wrapped around her like a warded cloak, warming and protecting her at the same time. The room felt hot, even in her low-necked festival dress. She fanned her breasts and noted with amusement the furtive glances Jardir cast while trying to feign disinterest. The Avesia lay open between them as they lounged on silken pillows, but Jardir had not read a passage to her in some time. They spoke of other things. Her improving language skills, his life in the Kaji Sharaj, and her apprenticeship to Bruna, how his mother had been outcast for having too many daughters.
My mother wasn't pleased to only have a daughter either.
A daughter like you is worth a dozen sons. But what of your brothers? That they are with Evrim now does not diminish her gift to them.
My mother lied about that, Amon. I am her only child. And I have no magic dice by which to promise you sons.
It will be as Evrim wills. Even if you have three girls first, I will cherish them and hold faith that sons will follow.
I'm not a virgin, either.
Jardir looked at her for a long time, and Leisha wondered if she had said too much. What business was it of his anyway, if she was or wasn't? But in his eyes it was, and her mother's lie weighed on her as if it were her own, for she confirmed it by her silence.
I am not either. Marry me.
What need do you have of another wife when you already have...
14. Kaji had 1,000.
Does anyone even remember the name of his 15th?
Shana Vakrivak. It is said her father stole shadows to make her hair, and from her womb came the first watchers, invisible in the night, yet ever vigilant at their father's side.
You're making that up.
Will you kiss me if I am not?
Only if I may slap you if you are.
Jardir pointed to the Avesia.
Every wife Kaji took is listed here, their names honored forever. Some of the entries are quite extensive.
All 1,000 are listed?
The entries don't begin to shorten until well after 100.
Leisha smirked and picked up the book.
Page 237, 8th line. What does it say?
Shana Vakrivak.
Leisha read the entire passage to him, trying hard to mimic the musical accent of the Krasian tongue.
It gives my heart great joy to hear you speak my language. I am penning my life as well. The Amanja, written in my own blood as Kaji wrote the Avesia. If you fear to be forgotten, say you will be mine, and I will pen an entire dune to you.
I still don't know that I wish to be.
Jardir's smile began to fade, but she leaned in, giving him a smile of her own.
But you have earned your kiss.
What if your mother catches us?
Leisha took his face in her hands, pulling him back to her.
I barred the door.
Leisha was an herb gatherer, a student of old world science and a conductor of her own experiments. She loved nothing more than to learn a new thing, and whether it was herbs or warding or foreign tongues, there was no skill she could not master and bring new innovation to. So it was for her in the pillows that day, as they shed their clothes, and Leisha, who had spent the last decade and a half learning to heal bodies, finally learned to make them sing.
You put even Jawar Sharum pillow dancers to shame.
Years of repressed passion.
Leisha stretched her back deliciously, unashamed at her nudity. She had never felt so free.
You're lucky to be the Shardamak, huh? A lesser man might not have survived.
I am bred for war and will fight this joyous battle with you 100,000 times if need be.
He stood and bowed low.
But I fear the sun is setting, and we must step into battle of another sort. Tonight is the first night of waning, and the Alagai will be strong.
Leisha nodded, and they reluctantly pulled on their clothes, and she, her pocketed apron. No one said anything to them as Garrod, Wanda, and Roger met them in the courtyard with the waiting spears of the Deliverer. Misha felt so different, she was sure it must be obvious to the others. But if it was, they gave no sign. Even during Alagai Sharak, Misha found it hard to keep focus so near to Jardir. He seemed to feel it too, never straying from her side as she inspected and dealt with the few minor wounds the skilled warriors incurred.
May I read to you again tomorrow?
Jardir would be needed for hours more, but the Hollowers were allowed to return to the Palace of Mirrors.
You may read to me every day, if you wish.
The Korling Prince kept a respectful distance as it watched the air and his men kill drones. The Mind Demon had been watching the air every cycle for several turns now, and as the princes had feared, he was a unifier. It was clear he did not know the extent of the powers of the demon bone, spear, and crown, but nevertheless, his power was growing, and the human drones were beginning to organize into more than an inconvenience. Already, it would be difficult to kill the heir, and even if the Korling Prince succeeded, there were many who could potentially take his place. But the northern female was a new variable, a weakness in the heir's armor. Her mind was unprotected, and she knew much about the heir and the one its brother tracked in the north. When she broke off from the others, the Mind Demon followed. Back in the palace, Leisha practically flew up the steps to her chambers.
What's got into you?
Nothing that hasn't gotten into you, it seems.
Wanda looked at her blankly.
Find your bed. Drillmaster Kaval will be in here shouting at you before you know it.
Kaval ain't so bad.
Wanda did as she was bade. Leisha walked on tiptoe past the door to her mother's chambers, praying the woman would at least have the decency to wait until morning before interrogating her. She thanked the Creator when she managed to slip past and lock herself in the suite where she and Jardir had made love. Alone at last, the wide smile she had been resisting all night broke out on Leisha's face, and a hood was thrown over her head. A cord at the base of the hood pulled tight, cutting off her breath. A strong hand yanked her arms behind her, and that same cord was used to bind her wrists. Her assailant kicked her feet out from behind and tied